Ringside with Pilar, produced for the Canine Chronicle.
Today I am interviewing Virginia Line, Ginny.
Normally, yes.
Normally, Ginny, but in judging programs, we see you listed as Miss Virginia Line from Canada. So my understanding is that you've been involved with dogs since 1953.
Correct.
So how did you get started in dogs?
My parents retired to Victoria, British Columbia. And I drove them absolutely insane, telling them that I had to have a dog, had to have a dog, had to have a dog. We ended up, once my father bought a house, I was just early teens, and he said, all right, I give in. And we'd always had dogs, I mean, all our life, well, in different parts of the world, different cockers. So somehow or another, we ended up getting a cocker. And we went to this, they were called puppy matches, sanctioned. It wasn't true sanctioned match. It was like a parlor match, as they called them in Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
It was CKC recognized, but we went, and there was a woman who had two black cockers, Merton, and two brothers. I got the one that was called Toro the Bull, and it justifiably fit his temperament, personality, and behavior. He taught me, because of his personality and behavior, he taught me more about dogs in how to train. I did obedience and did more obedience, and ended up judging obedience for many years.
Now, did you start judging obedience before you judged confirmation?
For a year. I did a year before with, I completed the confirmation a year after I had completed the obedience.
So
I used to judge parallel, both of them.
Oh, nice. There are other judges that still do that, obviously.
And I've stopped. I have more than enough to do with the confirmation.
Well, I'm glad we had time today, because I know tomorrow's a much busier day for you.
Very busy.
So this is good for us. How do you think things have changed in our sport since you first started?
I think that many of our dogs are significantly better than they were in a lot of our breeds. However, I don't see that we have the breeders that we used to have. They're out there, but they are definitely overshadowed to quite a degree by the very intense professional competition by moneyed backers.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, when people started from the days of Irene Schlintz, the rankings that started with the Phillips system and then grew from there into now every ranking imaginable, I think has had a, I don't like negative, but I think it's had an unfortunate effect on what we now see. I see too many somewhat generic, not breed-specific examples, winning multiple groups and best in shows.
Mm-hmm.
It is frustrating, I'm sure, for the quality breeders of some of the rarer breeds who don't have the finances to back. I mean, nobody is going to make, and I'll just pick an example because I've just done the sporting group, nobody is going to make a Spadoni Italiani.
A
top sporting dog, or,
right.
You know, because there just isn't.
Or a Glen of Amal, for example.
Or a Glen of Amal and the Terriers, isn't it? You know? And yet, in their own rights, there are some wonderful examples of those two breeds.
Well, because they do a job and they serve a function,
they have a function, and they're there for a reason. But they also have dedicated breeders who really do care about, and they're not willing to modify and alter their basic breed requirements in order to be glamorous.
Right. That's a very good point. They're not breeding for the next winner.
They're
breeding,
breeding
to preserve
for the
standard.
Exactly. And I think, too, unfortunately, some of our very, very glamorous dogs
mm-hmm.
are not necessarily as breed-specific as they might be.
We do have standards for a reason.
We have standards. And but if they're great show dogs, they can sometimes bypass some of the standard requirements.
Right.
They still have to be good examples of their breed. There's nobody that's going to have a really big track record on totally unacceptable examples of
right.
their breed. But at the same time, I think some of the more generic things can slide by.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been judging for quite a while.
Yes.
What do you think is one of the most difficult parts about being a judge?
Travel. the airlines.
In our time, that has changed about as dramatically as the dogs
TSA,
you're judging.
TSA.
Absolutely. I grew up an airline brat. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I have an artificial hip. TSA.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
You know.
Yeah. Besides the travel, though, I mean, is there anything that you find has become more difficult?
Lack of depth in the classes, lack of numbers to really be able to. You know, I love doing nationals and major specialties because you can really get your teeth into something that says, this is what I think your breed is meant to look like.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard on a daily entry of four or five dogs where there isn't anything that, there may be one really good special, but there isn't anything in the classes where you can go, oh, wow, this is a goosebump puppy or something. I mean, to me, finding a goosebump puppy is the highlight of a dog show, and if I don't have one of those at every dog show, you know, I mean, I had a kind of a goosebump dog out there in the sporting group. I hadn't done any of the breeds, but I had a dog come in. I thought, oh, I haven't seen as good a one of these for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and I was able to use him in the group. So, you know, that's a nice thing.
What would you say for those who are thinking about becoming approved to judge any breed at all? Do you have any advice you might pass along?
Get yourself an outstanding mentor who's prepared to teach. Sit at the ringside and watch. Take a very basic preliminary anatomy and structure so that you are, no matter how many years you have spent in dogs, you can still learn something that you, where you go, aha, I got it. There's a new moment. There's a new thought. And it's like, oh, now I understand, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things that I'm still getting them, you know. And if you love dogs and if you're passionate about judging and you really want to be observant about these things, they happen to you when you least expect them.
We hear a lot of people make statements about how difficult it is now to become a judge, the different processes that are there. I know some people that are approved for certain breeds have flat out said, I'm done, I'm not going for any more breeds, and I actually don't want
I
any more judging assignments.
The American Kennel Club doesn't make it particularly friendly for people to progress. I think they have their legitimate expectations to quite an extent, but unfortunately the rules and regulations change so much it's really hard to stay on the page,
mm-hmm.
as to what is required, and we're still in this new process that you have a committee now that is doing some evaluation. I still think that the days when the AKC reps were out there evaluating judging was still some of the most positive evaluations that can happen. I think that we need people to realize that you're not ready to judge after 10 or 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be around this game for a lot longer than that, mm-hmm. and really immerse yourself. The other thing that bothers me is the tendency for people to come show their dog, not sometimes even stay to the end of their breed if they don't win. They don't go and watch. I listened to somebody who has, in Canada, I can say this, who has Portuguese water dogs, who didn't think she would learn anything by going to a sighthound seminar. And I thought, sweetheart, you don't get the fact that you learn by seeing differences as mm-hmm. well as seeing similarities. And seeing your in-depth knowledge about all breeds.
Mm-hmm.
And people that say, oh, I don't like that breed. I wouldn't be interested in ever judging that breed. I'm sorry, you shouldn't be judging at all. You should be interested in judging anything and everything.
Right.
So you want to learn about all dogs. You don't maybe have to be an all-breed judge. You may not ever go beyond one or two groups if you're lucky. But you still never know how much you will learn by observing and listening and watching and being part of the game. And I think people rush at it too quickly.
Yeah.
They go into judging. I mean, we do what's called Judges 101, which is an introduction to judging in Canada. And people flock to this. They think they're going to have this, it's like a eureka moment that's going to happen for them. You know, they're suddenly going to discover what it is about judging.
Like some great big aha moment,
aha
and
moment.
The secret is now revealed.
It's now revealed.
Yeah.
And we had one just recently in Canada where there were 28 people participating. And one of the questions that came from one of the participants, what's a DQ?
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
I'm sorry. That
I'm not. And
disqualification.
Which is an indication to me that why would you even think that you might be ready to consider judging?
Right.
If you can't understand points, if you don't understand how dogs receive points, if you don't understand what a select is, if you don't understand the process involved in getting... And if you don't have empathy, the other part for me is I see too many of our judges who don't even have a dog anymore. How can you be passionately involved in dogs if you are doing it solely as a social event?
Mm-hmm.
You're going for the social contact. You're going for the experience of travel.
I was
going
to say the travel.
The travel.
To go outside of your
I get to
own.
Go to Australia, or I get to go to China, or, you know.
Right.
And those are incredibly exciting, but you're going to look like an absolute fool if you don't understand these breeds that you're going to meet in those countries.
Are you still breeding?
Oh, very much.
Yes.
2 to 3 litters a year.
Nice. What are some of the differences you see between Canada and America in...
Volume of dogs, numbers of dogs. I mean, our shows are significantly smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing, as a result, that our breeders... or exhibitors, I should probably say exhibitors in this case, that our exhibitors do not get out and have the numbers of dogs to be competitive with.
Mm.
But you know, some of the best dogs in Canada, I mean our real cream dogs, are as good as you will find anywhere in the world.
Nice.
But we don't have as many of them.
Mm-hmm.
So the
would you rather have the cream of something like that versus when you come here and you say there's nothing that's really amazing and it just all seems sort of mediocre and yet people have money behind a dog that may not be as phenomenal as you would like it to be?
That's a hard question because I think that we all want the phenomenals. You know, those dogs that are just up 3 yards above everybody
else. That make the decision-making process a little bit easier on you?
It is easy, except to me... I always have this joke that I always say that I think people should start their judging career by judging best in show.
Mm.
When they get really good at that, then they can judge a group. When they get really good at the group, then give them their breeds.
That's an interesting process.
And the reason for me is the most important judging that anybody will do is at the breed level.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the future of the breed. Those dogs are absolutely the foundation of the future for showing. And I'm afraid we may be in for a strange future with dog shows at the moment. But if you are judging best in show, you have 7 usually really very respectable quality dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you train your eye?
Hmm.
You train your eye on quality.
That's a really interesting way to look at it.
It'll never happen. But, you know,
but it's
the
a great
theory
thing.
Behind it is
But in talking about, you know, people that might want to become judges, where would you suggest they go? You really study the best in show lineup, and then you work your way down from there.
And then you work your way down from there, and then you study the group that you're going to be hopefully working in.
Right.
Because I don't think, unless you can see quality, unless you have observed really outstanding dogs...
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that your eye develops. And too many, you know, how do people start? They start with their own breed.
Mm-hmm.
They start in their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the last group they take? The one they're least comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Basset Terriers often ends up in that position.
Right.
Or people say, oh, I never want to judge toys, you know, because I'm afraid I'll break them. Well, get out of the dog show game if you feel that way, if you can't handle it, a dog. But I think that you need to start by looking. That's why I say go to nationals. Sit at the national. Don't take a dog. Just go and sit at the national. Sit with your catalog. Look at the dogs. Ideally, have a really good mentor sitting beside you.
And you have a great view of so many different breeding programs to sit there and compare to the standard.
And
it's the best place to see it because you're right. Here, You know, in most shows, you don't have enough of a class entry.
Unless you have a really strong breeder in an area. Mm-hmm. You know, geographically, you have an outstanding English Cocker breeder in Southern California.
Right.
So you're more accustomed to seeing good quality. And the garbage, the mediocre stuff, isn't going to win.
Right.
But that doesn't always, you know, work in every area. I see, as I travel, and I do a lot of dog shows out of North America, there are some parts where there are phenomenal dogs. I went to China and judged in Beijing, and I saw some of the best border collies I've seen anywhere.
Really? And you wouldn't expect really amazing border collies in China?
You go to Japan, and you see toy poodles, the likes of which you will never see, except when Hosaka Kaz brings in from Japan. And so, you know, you get, but there are phenomenal. I saw very good quality chows in China. I saw very good Siberians and some beautiful, believe it or not, Samoyed.
Have you ever judged in Australia?
Oh, many times. Yeah, dozens and dozens. Afghans are superb over there. Some breeds are very heavily based on English style stock, so your golden retrievers will look foreign to you a little bit, and your English Springers, but I love the English look on the English Springer. And a good golden retriever is, because we've lost our way on goldens in this country. Yeah.
There are always so many goldens. It's quite
it's a huge entry, popular. Yeah. Right now, we've lost our way. Mm. You know, there are still only a few breeders left that are really paying attention to what.
Take note, golden breeders. You heard it here. You've heard it from her mouth.
But, you know, we have lost our way there, I think. And I think Labradors have come up. I'm finding Labs are in certain pockets of the country. I have some fabulous. I went to Colombia, South America, and I judged, and Labradors there are wonderful. The Labradors are absolutely exceptional. Fabulous Labradors in Australia. I mean, there's a Labrador breeder in Sydney that he just stamps them out. I mean, they're just
phenomenal every single
phenomenal.
Time.
Phenomenal. Probably 10 or 12 Labrador babies crawling all over me, and as we evaluate his litters together and we talk about, I mean, what kind of foundation is that?
Yeah.
Judges need to do that. They need to see the development of puppies. They need to see how this dog that is maybe 12 or 14 months, if they've seen puppies at 3-4 months, they've got an idea of where that's got potential to go.
Yeah, it is important to understand every breed and how they change differently. I mean, you know, in my breed specifically, I know you can look at a 9-month-old puppy versus a 15-month-old puppy, and there are times when you just have to go, I'm just going to let this one grow up, and they might be slow to mature.
Leave it be.
But then when
Leave
they hit that maturity,
and you go,
they're amazing.
Whoa, where did this come from?
That's why they're part of a breeding program.
Yeah.
That's why.
That's why I kept
dry
them.
Ports. Exactly.
That's why I kept them.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that is it's an important thing for judges to be doing. And some of the best learning happens around the judges' tables, in the dining room, and in the evening after groups are over, sitting at ringside sometimes. Mm-hmm. Just little things that, you know, the Annie Clarks of the world tell you that resonate.
Right. That they lodge themselves in your brain so that you hear it in the back of your head when you're actually out there doing your own judging.
And I think, you know, one of your questions was, what would you say to a new judge that was just starting out on their first assignment? And I think, one, get in, get out. Mm-hmm. Don't stand and dither, because you'll only make mistakes when you stand around and stare at a group of dogs.
Don't second guess yourself.
And put the dog back together in a complete package and judge the total package. Do not judge parts. Mm. I think too much of our emphasis is on fault hunting. And instead, look for the quality and look for the dog that you put together into the package. For me, it's very much a factor that I want the dog's shape in place when it's moving on the go-round. Mm-hmm. It must hold its shape. Mm-hmm. Its tail carriage has got to be in the right place. Its head carriage has got to be correct. Mm-hmm. I want my border collie to drop and do stealth. Mm-hmm. You know, those things.
Yeah.
And if you don't put the dog back into the whole package, you're going to, I think, get yourself into a real confused situation with little bits of this and little bits of that. And, oh, I like this dog better than I. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it may
but
be.
But it's not the whole dog.
But it's not the whole dog.
I think that's great advice.
And when I'm breeding dogs, I always look at my, I always evaluate what I'm going to use for a breeding program, mm-hmm. you know, that way.
You and I were joking earlier, if you could Photoshop two dogs and put all the best qualities, you'll have the best dogs ever. But boy, we don't have that
we
capability.
We can't have that capability.
We
so.
Just have to
but if
make
you
the best
if you
attempts.
Do look at the dog on the go round, I always say that the English cocker that I have up on the table must look like the English same English cocker on the go round. And so many of them, you know, you crank them into their stack on the table, and then you take them around and the butt goes in the air and the tail terriers and mm-hmm. and you know and there's no reach
yeah.
So those are important.
Experience matters the most too. You have tons of it. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk
You're
with me today.
Welcome.
I love it. I'm sure everybody that listens to this will love it, and thank you again.
You're most welcome, Blair.
We'll see you.